Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Everybody.
Watch out.
Yeah, staggering levels of planning this week.
We just about decided the running order of two items. I had it entirely the other way around from him. Yep. Professionals.
Yes, this week we've been playing games.
We have.
We've been experimenting in the lab.
Card games and tabletop miniatures, yeah, and stuff.
I have to say, the lab, not as cold as it has been.
I'm very much appreciating the space heater, yes. Yeah,
but it's a rare sunny day, so...
Before we go any further, I'd just like to do a correction. Last week I incorrectly credited our Star Wars, the Old Republic group healer, as Zozo there. It was, in fact, Hung Document, so thanks a lot for your excellent healing work. Right, on with the show.
And you get upset when I taunt that person that way. Yes. So, shall we start with Malifaux?
Yes, so Malifaux then, essentially tabletop miniature skirmish type game?
Small skirmish game.
Okay. Now, not a war game, would you say?
No, there's a difference between skirmish and a large open war game. Mm. This, you're only using 6, maybe 8, maybe more, depending on the size models. And it's a lot more, each model's a lot tougher, takes a lot more to kill them, so it lasts longer with the fewer models.
Yeah, yeah. Each of the models seems more featured, more interesting. They have more unique characteristics. A little card comes with each one as well.
Yep. This was second edition. And what we're playing, which is still in beta, but the rules are not in beta, and all of the models we played with were from the released first set, which are no longer in beta.
Okay, so this is the second version of the game, but all the stuff from the first game still works. Third?
Yeah, because there's 1.5 as well.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so everything still works, and they're currently going through adding in through various levels of betas each of the other old crews that they haven't done the rules for yet.
That all sounds very complicated. So as an entry-level player, how do you go about getting into this?
This is relatively easy to get hold of. Well, easy to get into. You buy yourself a rule book. They just released a nice small one, which is
like
relatively
in that format,
cheap,
A5
$15,
size.
Little A5, you know, is none of the fluff. Quite a nice little book, mm-hmm, reasonably well written. Could really do.
We found most
more
of the
help.
Stuff we were looking for in there, yeah. As we on our sort of first time teach idiot Tim, yeah, how to play type.
And then there's the, to get into it, you need to grab yourself a...
You'll need an army.
A crew box.
A crew. They're, yes, called crews, aren't they?
Yeah, I was playing Children of December.
Okay.
Which is basically 6 models, most of them 6 models, to be honest. 3 minions, your leader, a larger thing, and also your familiar. Your...
What's your theme there, then?
Ice, snow.
Ice, snow, and some, yes, sort of Russian...
Ice Caimans.
Rasputina or something.
Yeah, Rasputina, who's in a very, very fetching, large, heavy jacket with...
The big hat as well, the big, yeah, big Soviet hat. We like that.
Who says you need scantily clad women models, no, to be attractive?
Yeah, very well-dressed and appropriate for cold weather, yes, dressed women. Excellent.
Yeah, and so... A couple of ice gaming, who are the weaker ones, an ice golem, who is a bit tougher and apparently blows up quite spectacularly,
yeah, so
and
we'll
also Wendigo, who is your totem. Your totem is basically familiar or friend
sort
or whatever.
Pet of the leader.
Of the leader. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, and you were playing the Ten Thunders.
I had Ten Thunders, a sort of oriental martial arts themed crew, run by Misaki something or other, mistress of the Ten Thunders, who has this ruddy great halberd and like fire coming out of a big like kick. It's a very dynamic looking model. I actually painted up some of these a while ago, and it's quite a challenge. The Malifaux models, they're not like the big clunky Games Workshop orcs, are they, which I'm more used to painting.
No, I think
they're very delicate. They're not for kids.
The modelling aspect is definitely worth mentioning. Mm. I reckon it's a lot stronger than the larger games, because one, the models are a lot more detailed.
More dynamic as well. There seem to be more interesting poses rather than just standing there, yeah, with a weapon.
They're all generally single pose.
Yeah.
But the number of models you use, it doesn't matter. I mean, the 3 ice gaming I had in this deck, in this crew, are all different sculpts, because it comes with 3 different sculpts, and they're a lot nicer. They are a lot more interesting to paint than, say, a Space Marine, which is the important thing. And
yeah,
each one is different, so you're not painting 500 Space Marines, which, yeah, is the most soul-crushing thing you could ever do in a game.
Yeah, I noticed that each of your sort of rank and file, we had three of the same, effectively the same unit, but they each had a different model. So,
if you want to go above three ever, then you do have to start duplicating.
I suppose, yeah.
They have started releasing the rank and file as a separate box as well, so if you want to have more of them, you can.
But that seemed like a reason. I don't know, what's a typical army size?
Around what we had, yeah.
Okay, which is...
It's 30-something soulstones or 40 or whatever.
So they have a pointage system allowing you to build an army that would balance against an opponent.
The points you don't spend, you get to use on extra soulstones for your...
And the soul stones are a kind of spendable currency in game, which lets you power up certain things or do certain stuff.
Yeah. Fudge stuff.
So if you've got points left over when you're deck building, and in some ways it might be advisable to do so, so have some points spare, you can actually use them to good effect in the battle. Excellent.
Now, the really interesting thing about this game, over everything else, is the fact it doesn't involve dice.
Yeah, I was particularly pleased with this because I played a fair bit of Warhammer 40K with your good self there over the time, and it's always been a really sort of, I don't know, in terms of metagame, the playing any, I suppose, fantasy battle as well, it must run on a similar sort of combat system. The whole point there is to be... minimising randomness, trying to fight against the dice to get things done. I mean, I sat down and worked out the odds of killing a Terminator Space Marine with a single Orc Blaster or something. It came up as about 1 in 300 or something like that, because they have this 2-plus armour save.
Yeah.
And whereas Orcs is all about... You've really got to... Because they've got such crappy-to-hit dice rolls, they only hit on, like, a, what, 4-plus or something, you have to... I think it's only a 5 or 6 with the shooting. So in order to overcome that statistical weakness...
Shooting was 6+.
Yeah. So you have to have lots and lots of goes at the dice. So it becomes a Zerg army and so on. And, yeah, so it becomes a game about balancing... And the statistics and the sort of probabilities of the dice become all too aware all too quickly, because it's not difficult maths to work out, you know, 1 in 6
chances.
And there's
no way to fudge the dice.
You can't do a lot to the dice either. But this is quite different in many ways, yeah. I mean, obviously, it looks superficially quite similar to a fantasy battle skirmish game. You've got some big old sewer playfield and some models, you know, with weapons all charging each other. But the intricacies of how the turn sequence and the attack and defend works seem quite different and quite fascinating.
But the interesting thing about it is the fact that when you want a random number, you pull the top card off your deck, flip it over, and that is the number you use.
Yeah.
And if you want... You can then use a card in your hand, which is of 5 cards, to replace that with a higher or lower number if you feel like it.
It's called cheating.
Yes.
And it's actually allowed in the rules. You can basically say, no, I don't like that result. I shall use one of my hand to replace that with the result I want. And that gives you so much more control.
If you have it... There, in this game, there was one attack which I really wanted to go through quite badly.
Yeah.
And so I had a 12-point card in my hand and a red joker in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Red joker is the most powerful card in the game, basically, and lets you just win.
Yeah,
and I used both of them but through cheating on it to make sure the attack went through and almost killed one of your models.
It's worth noting that to play this, you need a standard pack of normal playing cards.
Or you can
buy special ones that they provide as well. But functionally, they're identical, and it is essentially a 54-card deck like you'd find in a poker game or whatever.
Yes.
Including the two jokers, which become important as play continues.
Yeah.
And that's just nice as well, you know, to not having to root around for hundreds of dice and... keeping it all quite compact and in use.
It's a very compact game, because you're meant to play it on a 3x3 table, and then you've just got a line of cards that you use. You're not having to roll 100 dice. You're not on this massive 9-foot-long table.
Mm. Also, the difference between a deck of cards and a pile of dice is the dice are infinitely random. Every time you roll them, the dice have no memory. It doesn't matter. It'll always be 1 to 6. You've got no idea, no way to plan. Whereas, because Malifaux essentially uses a standard pack of normal playing cards, the possibility of a sort of card counting becomes available as well, and that adds another strategic dimension to it. You can look at the cards in your discard and think, Christ, there's a lot of 12s and 13s have gone through there. I need to play it a bit carefully from here on.
Or when your deck's getting low, you can start thinking, I haven't had that red joker yet.
Yeah, you can actually sort of anticipate in a sort of pseudo-random fashion, which I find a lot more appealing than the standard Games Workshop.
And, of course...
casting dice and just hoping for the best.
And that's on top of the being able to guarantee, almost, that you're going to succeed with an attack if you have the right hand.
So each turn, you essentially have a fresh hand of five cards that you keep to yourself, and you can use those to replace any of these random cards that come up at most opportunities.
Unlike most games, each turn you reshuffle or you discard back into your deck, so they're all there again. If you use your Joker, it's there again for the next turn,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting, because otherwise you run out of cards very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you do cheat too often, you end up with nothing in your hand, at which point your opponent knows you have nothing in your hand and so you're going to be cheating.
You have to pace your cheating. You only have five cards to use throughout the whole of your army's go, and those can be used on damage rolls, attack rolls, well, rolls, flips, they call them, because it's cards, not dice.
But you can't roll a
card. You can't roll a card, not easily. But you have to sort of pace yourself and decide whether you want to, you know, intervene early on to get a good head start in the turn, or whether you want to save your big guns for the later in the round to claw something back. It's a game that presents you with a lot more choice and control than anything Games Workshop have offered that I've found that I've
but
played.
There's still an awful lot of tactics and little combos you can do with your people. And
there's enough randomness there to keep things interesting still. Once you've run out of cheat cards, you still have to
do with what you get. It only guarantees a small fraction of your turn. The rest of it is still random, and you get to choose which bit you want to guarantee.
Modifiers are interesting as well. Various things that can happen to you, either card abilities or things that your opponent does to you, or just situations on the battlefield, will allow you to gain plus and negative fate modifiers. And a negative fate modifier basically means that instead of flipping one card and taking its result, you flip two cards and then you're forced to use the worst of those two. Positive fate modifier, same thing, but you're allowed to choose the best of the two cards you flipped. So it subtly alters the probabilities in play, and it's quite fascinating to see it work. I like it.
Yeah. When you buy it, you get all you need to play for each crew in the box. It comes with all the cards needed in the box. But
this is the cards with your stats on and everything. Yeah,
And there's also extra upgrades you can add. If you've got older ones, there are these things called Arsenal decks, which are basically just all of the cards for a faction that have been released so far.
Okay, so if you've got a vast collection of models.
So if you're going from 1.5 to 2, you can get all the cards you need.
Okay.
But you shouldn't need to do that if you're just starting.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing I like. It's quite obviously not set up to encourage you to just spend as much as you possibly can on models or anything. You've got 10 figurines that you've painted up, you're good to go, really. And you generally look like you wouldn't need huge amount of variation beyond that.
You might want to expand out a bit amongst the stuff that's available for your chosen master. But that's never going to be hundreds of models. It's always going to be at most
three or four, perhaps.
Most.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you want to branch out and get a second faction on the go, then that's entirely your own lookout.
Lot of people buy them because they're really nice models.
They are. I do. Yeah, I'm liking the quality there. All right, let's talk through the game we just played.
Okay.
So you got your Rasputina and your December's Children lot, and I got Misaki and the Ten Thunders. Started at each end of a cardboard sewer that was quite interesting.
Yes,
what was that all about? We should probably take some photos of that.
I got some of the TerraClix stuff.
Okay.
Which is basically card scenery, which clips together with these little smoky clear clips.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic clips.
Created quite an easy to put together and quite convincing playfield for the battle.
I put us together what was basically an arena.
Yeah, just a sort of sewer.
A little bit of manoeuvring in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it
even has raised sections in three dimensions, so it's quite interesting.
It took me about 20 minutes to do.
Yeah.
Including finding all the boxes,
that
finding all the clips.
Quite a good little system. Probably want to put a link in some
That's
show
quite
notes
hard to get hold of now because it's sort of out of print.
Oh, okay.
Because for reasons which aren't entirely clear, they haven't released any more of that recently. Possibly because they've just been gearing up for the second edition stuff, and TerraClix is a sort of separate company and it's all a bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still buy it. It's hard to get hold of, and always has been hard to get hold of because it's so popular.
Yeah.
Same with the rulebook. The rulebook is really hard to get hold of at the moment. The models themselves, not so hard.
Okay. So, start each end of the sewer. There was something about placing strategic objectives or something or other. I lose track of what the point we were fighting over was. It's the usual setup, though, isn't it? Look in the book, flip a card.
Yeah.
If it's this, then we have this scenario, and you start here, and you have to do this, this, and this to earn victory points.
Yeah, doing stuff like that, capturing places on the map, or
objectives, really. I still can't quite remember what the objectives were, but we went with the killing each other strategies.
The main one was to capture points along the midline of the board, and the other one was to kill people.
Okay.
So we concentrated on the kill people.
Yeah, because I got just a bit confused about objectives, and this was my first time playing. So I thought, I understand mayhem and death, so we'll go for that.
We're good at mayhem and death.
Yes. So basically, one victory point if you kill two enemy models in the same during the same turn.
Yeah.
And a bonus victory point if all of the enemy's models are gone, which in the event of really slow play would have eventually ensured one side would have won eventually. There was a turn limit. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's got that sort of countdown type of mechanic. So at the end of turn five, I don't know how many we did in the end. Was it three?
I think we did four because the last turn was very short. Okay. One of us only had
so at the
model.
End of turn five, you then start flipping cards. And if it's a 10 plus, the game's over. And then turn six, if it's a 9 plus, the game's over. And so on. So eventually it would theoretically have ended by about, 20 turns or something, which seems a bit excessive. It took quite a while to play. How long did we play in total? About 2-3 hours. There was a lot of looking rules.
Yeah,
up.
2 and a bit hours, but there was an awful lot of looking up rules.
Yeah, first turn.
Once we got going, it was a lot quicker.
We got the flow. The flow when it clicks does seem to work quite well.
It is actually a very simple rule.
There's
system.
A lot to look up though. That rule book's 100 pages, and then some of its scenarios. But the playing the game section ends on page 67. So yeah. There's a lot of quirky bits in there. There's a lot of explanation and examples. Yeah. So we got going, got underway, and basically I just decided I can't work out this. Objective stuff, so I'm just going to charge at you and try and kill you all.
Yeah,
that was my plan most of the way through.
I decided to retaliate because there was a tactic which I came to quite quickly about the way some of my characters play.
There wasn't much subtlety going on in that game. We both basically just barreled at each other and started hacking. I was particularly impressed with my Torakagi. I don't know if I pronounced that right. They're basically ninjas. They're described as minions, and I had three of those on my side. And they got some interesting rules. Very much spatially awareness placement based. If they're more than, I think, if they're within 3 inches of another model, then they're the one with the crowd. Ability kicks in, which grants them additional defense because they're like hiding amongst people. And the works best alone is kicks in if they're more than 3 inches away from any other friendly models. So basically, the idea is to split them out as far as possible because the works best alone gives them quite an attack bonus. They got shurikens, they got little nunchucks, so you got good ranged or melee options there. And I was sort of trying to use a bit of both, and they were working quite well, even just single models out and about. As long as you keep their positioning correct to trigger all of their different abilities. They're very survivable and quite potent. What was working good for you there? What were you planning with?
The main defence I had was whenever you kill one of my models, they explode.
that did actually take out a couple of my ninjas, I think, at one point.
And your...
big ice monster, boom. Yeah,
it decimated people. Also, the other major thing I had was Rasputina can fire her abilities... through people within 10 inches.
Oh, what other friendlies?
Yeah. So I was using my minions up front to hit people who maybe I couldn't have hit normally.
That was probably the best plan for her, because looking at her melee abilities, they were almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Once I finally got Misaki to charge straight through.
Very slow, could only move through in 2 inches, was it?
Very much a sort of ranged glass cannon type, wizard type, I suppose.
I still had 12 hit points, but not a lot I could do once in close combat.
There's no rules about if your crew leader dies, the game's over or anything like
not that.
Not
I ever saw.
I suppose the scenario could be adapted for that. So Misaki worked well for me. The boss there. It has something called Diving Charge, which basically allows the charge action to push her straight through. Normally you have to go round other models, but she was allowed to go straight through them, so I basically ran straight through your army to your boss at the back and started chopping away with the halberd, which worked quite well. So the basic turn sequence then, you draw your hand at the start, you have 5 cards, there's some stuff that allows you to draw more and discard some and this, that and the other, but you end up with 5 cards in your hand. You want good high numbers in that hand, because that's what you're going to be using to cheat onto other cards with.
Yep.
So you deploy your troops, each model activates, it's typically allowed a number of action points, usually 2. The bosses, I think, get 3, and some of the other models, maybe. And you're allowed to do 2 things, then. And a thing can be movement, it can be charging, which is different. You have to use use 2 points to charge, and you have to end the charge in contact with an enemy model, and then you're allowed 2 free attacks to compensate for having spent 2 to do the charge. You can do ranged attacks, shooting attacks, you can do casting actions, tactical actions there. The cards all have various things that you can do. Some of them are buffs, some of them are heals. A lot of them are generally just melee or ranged attacks, and they'll cost action points as well. You resolve each of these attacks in what are called duels, which you look at your attack stat. It'll either be SH for shooting or ML for melee. There'll be a number there. You then flip a card from your deck, and that number is added to that card. In certain circumstances, you can have fate bonuses or penalties, so you're either allowed to flip two and then pick the best one, or flip two and you have to pick the worst one. Once you've settled on a card that's applied to your attack, you can then cheat on it. You can replace it with one from your hand, but you've only got five of those per whole turn, so you have to pace yourself with those, choose whether now's the moment to do that.
And they may not all be good in your hand anyway.
Yeah, then your opponent does the same with their defence score. Depending on the sort of attack, it'll be a different sort of stat. There'll be a number there. Then they flip a card and add that number as well. They're allowed to cheat as well to replace that card.
And when it comes to the cheating, the person with the lowest score cheats first, so you get to know whether or not you should respond.
Yeah, if you need to respond with a cheat or let it go. Then you're either your attack fails and you move on, or your attack succeeds and you do damage flipping, which is flip another card from the deck. Now, the damage flips, each of the special Malifaux deck has the words weak, moderate and severe on it, which is the category of damage you then apply based on what is on your attack's action card. If you're using a normal deck of cards, I think there's a lookup table somewhere. It's basically
if you've got normal cards, you'll be looking up a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. So that then you look on the attack action to see which of the three numbers to apply, and obviously if it says severe, it'll be a bigger number. That then gets applied to the target and they take wounds. And if all their wounds are gone, they're dead. There's various abilities you can use to mitigate damage or heal them and so on. And that's basically a model's go over once it's spent all its APs doing things. Once all of the play then moves across to the opponent, they activate a model and do stuff with it. Once all the models on both sides are activated, the turn's over. You count up any victory points that were earned and you move on.
It's relatively straightforward when you think about it.
Relatively straightforward, yeah. It's all reminded me a bit of the constant looking up of the turn sequence in Warhammer. I'd love to have seen some sort of print out cards with the summary stuff on. That would be nice.
You could really do with that.
We were doing a lot of riffling in the book, particularly with some of the more elaborate damage flip lookups.
The book doesn't even have a good summary anywhere in it.
So. The index is all right, but for big concepts. But I think once we got the hang of it and got going, it was quite a good and relatively even battle as well. Mostly I was sort of sniping away at his ice monsters from range with shurikens, but they were kept blowing up and taking either his own troops or mine with them. Eventually you managed to... You took my big bruiser thing out, didn't you? Ototo, or whatever he's called, big samurai fellow with an enormous club. The sort of counter to your giant ice monster, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, good stuff.
Ice monster blew up and took out my...
you managed to take the bruiser out and a couple of the ninjas. Managed to just break on through and push on to your boss, who didn't seem to be that good at melee.
No.
So I recommend more kiting in future.
Yeah. And in the end, it was a rather resounding victory for you. You'd only really lost
In terms of victory points, though, I had two and you had one.
Oh, no, you would have had three at the end because of the having tabled me.
Okay, yeah, it's a bonus point for that. So, but yeah,
it's possible to win and lose the battle.
I think I might have accidentally hit on how to use the ninjas well at the start. It's a very spatial thing. It's very about keeping them at the correct distances from everything else, near, too far.
And mine are the exactly the same. It's all about keeping them at the right distance away from yourself.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that very well.
Yeah, certainly your boss needs to hang at the back and use that remote casting thing well. Use your minions as things to attack with and through, I suppose. But yeah, that was good. I'd play that again, certainly. We didn't really have time to change ends and play with each other's armies, as it were, but...
It's going to definitely get used again.
I should, yeah, definitely want to play that again. It's good stuff. So how much does it all cost? Where do we get it?
Oh, you can get it almost anywhere. It's $15 about 15 quid, because, you know, that's how conversion rates work. For the cheap rulebook, there's also a $40 bigger rulebook, or however much it costs, which has all the lore in and stuff as well, which is even harder to get hold of.
Mm-hmm.
And you
so much as one of them crew boxes, typically?
About 30 quid.
Okay. And that would basically contain all the models you'd need
all
to play.
All you need to start. So if you and a mate want to start playing, it's incredibly
cheap.
Well,
you probably need one army each, I suppose. That'd be
you need an army each,
yeah.
And a rulebook between you.
It's not too exorbitant, no.
And certainly, you probably have a deck of cards.
Certainly compared to some other wargaming companies I could name.
Yeah. You can
it's
it
nice
to
see an alternative system, isn't it?
Well, there are plenty of alternative
systems
out there.
We briefly dabbled with, was it War Machine?
Yeah.
Briefly. We'll have to come back to that and try again for a proper one.
We are
going to
do a show on that at some stage, but War Machine I don't quite like as much. for various reasons.
I like the small scale of this. I mean, I typically prefer war games. If we're doing sort of tabletop wargaming, I prefer the variants where it's small skirmish, where each model is individually interesting, has abilities, has powers, is a bit survivable, rather than the sort of hundreds and hundreds of one hit point soldiers that all you spend hours lining up and trying to move all at once, you know.
Yeah, I tend to prefer the other way around, which is why I didn't really like War Machine, but this works because it is a bit more interesting and everything moves fast enough to be able to get the manoeuvring in.
I particularly like the we didn't talk about triggers, did we? When you're doing attacks, you flip the cards, and depending on the suit of the card, you may or may not be able to activate optional extra abilities as well. That all keeps it quite interesting, as well as, you know, just am I flipping enough points to be able to attack and win? It's also, can I flip points to activate all these cool special powers? Quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, so would you recommend people play this game?
I think yes.
I would too.
I think it's a good one, yeah.
And if you don't like playing the game but do like painting miniatures, I especially recommend it.
Yeah, special mention of the miniatures. They're particularly well detailed and interesting. I like
they make the Games Workshop ones look very clunky and not
the whole
very
Malifaux
detailed.
Setting is a kind of steampunky Victoriana type of place anyway, so you'll see a lot of bodices and clockwork stuff going on these models. But there's all sorts of weird side factions and concepts going on there.
Lots of undead and various other things.
Mm, yeah, it's good. There's something for everyone there, I think. Yeah. I think it sits in a good happy medium, I think, in terms of complexity and investment and the amount of time-consuming modelling needs doing as well.
Well, and especially because it's so relatively cheap to get into, you can have it as a second system quite happily and not feel guilty about having spent loads and loads of money on it.
Definitely.
You would never do that with 40K. You're either a 40K player or you're not a 40K player.
Yeah, you can't just dip your toe in with that, can you? No.
Well, you can, but it costs about 500 quid now because it's stupid.
Excellent.
So, yep, that's a recommendation on our first game.
Yes, we like that. Malifaux, very good.
Two thumbs up.
Malifaux version 2, is it?
Version 2, yep,
yeah.
Second edition.
You can't, second edition, you can't really get the first stuff
about. Oh, it'll still be around in...
And just, search shops. Online for the stuff. Look for your local hobby stockist, whatever.
Yep.
I'm sure there'll be the little boxes there.
Yes.
Good one.
Shall we move on to our second game?
All right, second game then.
This was Android Netrunner.
Android Netrunner. Now, this seems vaguely familiar to me before we started playing it recently. I'm sure I've seen this before. Is it a relatively new thing or a reboot?
It's been around... Well, it originally was a Richard Garfield game.
Okay.
Back in the day. Mm. Back in the day of collectible card games when they were still major thing.
Okay. Already alarm bells are ringing.
And it flopped.
Yeah.
Because it was just at the wrong time when people were really getting fed up with them and all the games were shutting.
Magic the Gathering had all that money. Yeah. Was Garfield the fellow who invented Magic the Gathering in the first place? Okay. Well, he'd sort of gone off on his own to try and invent something else. Was it a Wizards thing?
Well, it's currently owned by Wizards. Yeah.
Okay.
The license is licensed by Wizards and then Fantasy Flight Games have licensed it off them.
So this has the potential to be colossally evil.
It does indeed, but it's a limited card game.
Okay, which means you get all the stuff in the box when you fork out your first investment.
You do. You get a starter set,
yep.
Which is where it is actually slightly evil.
Okay.
Which contains enough cards to be able to play the base game and enough counters. Two players head to head.
Good.
It's a game of runners.
Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk. Runners running against...
And there's some fantastically 80s artwork on some of those cards.
Running against the corporation, trying to hack into their servers and stealing agendas.
Yeah.
Which is information they can find useful while the corporation is trying to score those agendas and further their games.
So asymmetric gameplay.
Very asymmetric.
What does that mean?
It means that you're both doing different things.
Yeah. So rather than, you know, comparable, similar, or mirrored decks playing against each other for the same sort of victory conditions, what we've got here instead is the corporation, who lays their cards out in a particular fashion. They have to basically set out a bunch of remote servers upon which they then install and run agendas, which when they come to fruition score them points. And these will be things like big PR news takeovers or banking and this, that and the other. All the evil things corporations did in the 80s.
Yes.
And then on the other player, meanwhile, is a runner who is a person rather than an organisation and has a different layout of cards at the same time as well, and they are basically trying to attack the ice around these remote servers with a view to getting into the servers and liberating these agendas and stealing them. And if they can do that, they score points.
Yeah, if they get enough information out, they win.
Yeah. And but it's interesting the way the sort of table lays out as the play sort of goes on, as you sort of get these different sorts of play being installed and cards going down and the whole setup of the thing. It's quite fascinating to watch.
Yeah, you start by picking your identity,
mm-hmm.
which is basically one of the big corporations like NBN, who's the Fox News of the world, or Jinteki, who basically specialise in damage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have theme decks, I suppose.
Yeah, and you build up these decks. The core set comes with enough cards to be able to build several decks. It comes with starter decks,
mm-hmm.
and one of the first things you should do is go through and try and hone that down into something a bit better.
Okay.
Because there are better decks you can make using the starter set than the ones you get.
Okay. So already, I don't know, I suppose on the one hand, it's good that there's room for improvement once you've learned what it's all about. But on the other hand, you know, is that sort of hampering brand new players, blinding them to potential strategies?
Well, no. You can pick them up quite quickly. You'll realise as you're playing through that some cards are almost useless to you. Some cards which seem useful, you just don't have enough, because that's where the slightly evil comes in.
Mm.
In the starter set,
we could just do with a few more of those.
The starter set is the one place where when you buy the card, you don't get all three copies. You're only allowed a maximum of three cards of any one type in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And the starter set is the only place where some of the cards don't come in threes.
So to have the maximum flexibility in your deck building, you'd need to buy the starter set for three times or something?
Yes, for some of those cards.
Potentially unnecessary, I don't know.
But for the rest of it, everything past the starter set, it comes with three copies of everything, so you only have to buy them once.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's decent enough.
The other stuff that's been released is there's basically these 60-card packs, which are the data packs, which go in six box cycles, one a month, effectively.
Mm, okay.
And then occasionally they do a...
Would you need to go for that every month?
No, not every month.
To be competitive?
If you look at, say, the Netrunner wiki on Reddit...
Mm.
They have a list of, you know, you can get by only buying this four sets of expansions.
Okay.
And get most of the good cards.
So you can get value for money where necessary. That's
yeah.
Good.
You don't need everything. And some of them are going. Some of them have a lot of obscure stuff in.
So it sort of sidesteps somewhat the horrific booster pack methods of Magic the Gathering.
It avoids
or whatever.
The always having thousands of copies of every stupid rare you don't care about.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the evilness of the old collectible
card. So if there were a specific card I wanted to go out and buy, could I do that? Or,
yes,
am I going to be playing lockbox lotteries with booster packs?
If you want one particular card, you look up which pack it's in and buy it.
And you'll get it.
And you'll get all you need
from that.
That's
okay. That's not so bad. Okay, so let's have a talk through the turn sequence then. So basically, runners and corporation take turns to do the whole thing and then pass control over. Each time it's your turn, you get a little track marker with a little clock thing on it. And I think, does the corporation get three or four?
I get three, you get four.
John automatically identifying with the corporation.
Yeah.
There. I was the runner.
You
yes.
are meant to switch over, but every game we played so far has been.
He's an evil corporate, and I'm a free spirit.
I can't identify with the free spirit. Stuff.
Me neither. Yeah, yeah. So there we go. Naturally settled down into runner and corporation. So yeah, you have a certain amount of action points you can spend over the turn, and each of those does different things. You have some basic options that each side can do. He's looking them up at the moment. Yeah. I've forgotten off the top of my head. But also various cards that you deploy will then open up new things you can spend your little action points on to do as well. You have a pool of credits that you earn and spend. The corporation will be spending credits to install things activate, isn't it?
Yes. What the corporation has to do is they put down face down cards which
yes.
go where your agendas go. Now these could be agendas.
These are your remote servers.
Yeah, it could be an agenda, it could be an asset, or it could be a trap of some kind.
Yeah,
and then past them, I put face down ice, or you put face down ice,
mm-hmm.
which when the runner comes to run against the server, he picks which server he wants to run against, and then. Those ice can be activated for cash from the court player, and then you have to resolve this and try and break it.
Mm-hmm. So also then, presumably, I can't remember how your agendas work. You spend money to make the agendas nearer to completion, that sort of thing?
You play one click, which is your...
The click is your action points.
Your action points, and you put a counter on your agenda while it's face down.
Yeah.
So that... And once you've gone to a certain level, you can reveal it, activate it, score it, and then you've got those points.
Yep.
As having won.
Yeah.
Now, where it gets interesting is I could be putting down... I could be putting the upgrades on another card, which the runner thinks an asset, but actually it's a trap that I'm leveling up.
Gain no particular benefit by increasing the points on those traps, but it tricks me into thinking I ought to attack it because it's a likely to be a valuable thing for you, and by implication for me. So as the runner, then I basically draw cards. You get a card draw for free, but as I have to pay to draw.
Yes,
a card,
I get one for free. You have to
click,
pay.
I pay a click to
because
draw a card.
Your cards in the runner's hand are your health.
Yes, which is a fascinating mechanic. We never really come across a situation so far where you've been doing meat damage to me or whatever the hell it is.
It depends on the corporation.
It's more of a theme thing, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. But so the runner is basically buying cards and paying money to activate them, and there'll be things like resources or hardware or software that all goes in my deck, which is in the area of the table. The software is likely to include icebreakers, which will be the tools I use to then make runs on his remote servers. And then, yes, the runner approaches the ice of the chosen server and so on, and he can choose to reveal the ice. If the ice is revealed, I then have to go through a big old checklist of stuff before I can... First, I have to have enough strength of hack to be able to interface with the ice, which has a defence value. Once you've gone over that, then there's a whole bunch of subroutines that are listed on the card, and each one I generally have to deal with in some fashion. Most of the subroutines are simply end the run, unless I choose to do whatever it takes to get rid of that subroutine. And that's determined by the type of ice I'm using. Some ice can deal with barrier code, some ice can deal with shield code or whatever. So there's quite a lot of intricate sort of matchmaking involved in actually getting through to these servers. Of course, you could just choose the corporate player can choose not to just not activate it at all, in which case I get a free go at whatever's there. But if that's a trap, then I can possibly take damage and be tagged and have all sorts of inconveniences employed on me. And yeah, if I take more meat damage than I have cards in my hands, I'm killed.
Yeah,
which is bad.
Let's take an example of a piece of ice.
Yep.
Which is called Archer.
Okay.
And they all have a bit of flavour text. Mm. And I just like to point out what this one is, which is next time read the terms of service more carefully, or you might find yourself in the danger zone. Which is really, really, really funny if you watch a certain TV show.
But that has some characteristics I would then need to find an icebreaker that matched and to be able to beat.
Yes, this is a destroyer sentry. Destroyer, so you have to be able to deal with the sentry. And then each point in it, there's a line which has to be cracked.
Mm.
The first one is the corp gains to cash.
So typically I would circumvent that by having an icebreaker of a matching type and paying some credits or whatever.
Or let me have that one because it just gives me two cash and doesn't
really
hurt
you.
Just
decide not to break that subroutine. Yeah. And although, am I not allowed through it unless I break them all?
No, you only stop them at the end of the run.
Yes.
The next one is Trash One Program.
Yeah, so that would be one of my icebreakers, or there are other utility programs that generate money
and
or are defences.
Trash One Program.
Yeah.
And then there's End the Run, which if you do, you end up jacking out and stop the run.
Yeah, so the whole thing ends if I don't do what's necessary to get past that as well. If I can get past that, then I can have a look at it. I can have a go at his remote server.
Or the next one.
Or the next ice in the row, yeah. They can have multiple ice cards. Barring each server, it's quite an interesting sort of ebb and flow of the pacing there, the combat, the sort of the doing the runs, as it were.
Yeah, it's a very, very tactical game and very, very pokery when it comes to bluffing.
Yeah, about managing resources. What do I sacrifice to advance? What should I stockpile? That sort of thing. When to spend my ticks on earning more money? When to spend that money on stuff?
And there's an awful lot of the corporation trying to bluff the runner into running into traps.
That's the sort of advanced and clever gameplay that we're starting to see as we play more of it. Yeah,
And if you like. You're meant to play corp, then swap, play runner, or vice versa.
Yeah,
just play two
we must
games.
Try that at some point.
Yeah, but if you only like, you don't like the more deceptive kind of play and you just want to be more forthright or the other way around.
Because it's interesting to note that the runner has no face-down cards. They're all visible on the table. You've got a hand, obviously, but apart from that, there's no secrets on the runner's side because there doesn't seem to be many ways for the corporation to directly go up against the runner that I saw. Perhaps that's more of a deck theme thing.
Most of it at the moment seems to be going through tags. If you run against me and certain conditions are met, then I can tag you and then do things against that later.
Yeah, once those tags are set up, that opens more opportunities for you to actually hurt me. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly fascinating, sort of the asymmetric gameplay nature of it all. But I just wonder, so far, is there not enough ways for the corporation to win? I don't know if we haven't played very many games.
Well,
we
haven't moved past the starter. When you move past the starter, there's a lot more types of decks that can be played.
Okay,
and you get in each one of the expansions at least one or maybe two. Usually, some have none extra different identities.
Okay,
which change things around so that
the sort of your hero abilities for the runner and the corporation's global abilities as well. Yeah,
So you know, they'll do stuff like there's one here, replicating perfection for the Jinteki, which is the runner cannot run on remote servers. Ignore this ability until the end of the turn. Whenever the runner runs on a central server, which basically is. You have to run against the central server first, then you can do the remote server.
Okay.
So you have to run against the hand, the deck, or the
crash. That's the interesting thing as well, yeah, exactly. As well as running against each of these deployed remote servers he's using to try and build up points over time, I could actually run against his deck, which has done me well, because I think there was a particular program in my deck that I was using which allowed me to, if I ran against R&D, which is what they call the deck, you were allowed to take two extra cards. And so you do that, and you cycle through three of his cards, and any agendas you find that he hasn't even got yet that come up in this search of three, you get to keep and score, which is good. But also you can run against the discard pile, and you can run against the hand as well. I don't know what happens if I empty your hand.
Nothing. Just have no cards to play.
You just have no cards to play, yeah. If you empty my hand by, you know, in any means that are available to you, then that would actually kill me outright and end the game for a victory for you. So, yeah. Interesting gameplay. I like it. I'd like to play more of it. Let's try some of these other decks as well. Try and see what the different variations are.
Yeah, and there's each month there's another variation basically comes in.
Yeah.
So even if you play constantly, there's still enough in there. The meta keeps changing to keep it interesting.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, yeah, it just seems like quite a subtle and intricate and yet quite tightly self-contained sort of game. I just like the asymmetrical nature of it. It's quite fascinating. Don't see that a lot.
No. I have this sort of general idea that it'd be nice to carry around with me everywhere a couple of games so that I've always got something to play if needs be.
Yeah. And this doesn't need anything extra, dice, no board or counters or anything.
There are the counters.
Well, there's the counters that come with it.
But you can chuck those in a bag. Those, or just use a bit of paper or whatever.
Yeah.
But there are games that I have on the list of stuff. Flux and things.
It needs a fair bit of table space.
It does
though.
Need a lot of table space.
And also, I don't know if there's three and four player rules.
No, there's only two player rules, which is a bit of a problem.
I suppose with asymmetric decks, it's quite a challenge to keep both sides balanced against each other
To do is you could possibly play a four player where everyone could run against each other.
Yeah, I suppose.
So the two runners could run against either of the corps and each of the corps trying to win.
Maybe.
But it might just...
Seems a bit clumsy, though.
It would be clumsy and it might completely unbalance it.
I think it's fantastic for what it is, which is just a really, really finely tuned and precisely calibrated two-player combative card game.
Oh, it is. And they don't seem to keep breaking it when they add new cards, which is
that's nice.
Because that does happen.
The temptation's there all the time, yeah. We need to make people buy our expansion. Why? Well, I don't know. Why do they need to buy our expansion if they've got all they need? Well, we need to create something they need.
That's one of the beautiful things about the limited card game. It does hook into that collecting obsessive.
Yeah, yeah.
But still gives you enough to be able to keep going and play. And it may well be that you don't buy any other expansions until you start coming up against cards that you realise you want to play again, play yourself, and then you start buying them.
Yeah, I could see me getting a set of this, actually. I mean, I don't tend to buy huge numbers of games myself, mostly because my co-host here has got them all. But, sort of thing I feel like I could actually get involved, get interested in some limited engagement of deck building with, rather than going mad with, hundreds of boosters and boxes and things.
The deck, well, there aren't hundreds. There's only 12 soon of those on one expansion. So.
Okay.
The deck building is fascinating and it is half the fun. When you're playing with a deck which isn't something you've made, you're never really quite playing the full game.
You don't quite understand why it's the way it is and what to do with it, I suppose, unless you put it together yourself, I think. Yeah.
It's like in the...
How the combos fall out and all that sort of thing.
When you're making the first optimised deck with the ones in the starter, you start looking, there's this one card, which is only one of them in the starter, which is really, really powerful. And one of the choices you have to make very early on is, do you ditch that card to try and get the number of cards in your deck down a bit to make it a bit more likely that the rest of the cards will come up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a no-brainer, really, because, you know, you're only ever going to get that card by chance. So only in so many percentages of the games you play will it ever become a thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a certain sort of mathematical predictability about it. Again, no dice, you know, it's cards. You know what's in there, you know what's come through, you know what's likely to come through, but you're not sure what the next card is going to be. Yeah. And that's the best sort of way, I think.
And there are ways to manipulate that, more so in the later expansions than in the main one, but
yeah,
you can manipulate your decks and dig stuff out if needs be.
Right, interesting. So where do we get this?
You can get it just about anywhere.
I should stop asking you that question, yeah. Really. I think our listeners are clever enough to find
GameStop,
this stuff.
You could go along to Amazon.
How much does it cost for the basic set?
The base set is about £34, I think.
Okay.
The box set, the Creation and Control, I think it's called, is, yes, I can see it from where I'm sitting, is £25, and each of the expansions of which... There's six in a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Genesis Cycle was the first one. They're all out. They're £10, £11 each. Then there's Spin Cycle, which is the one currently just finishing off. There's two more of those to release of the six. And then there's a whole new one coming later on in the year. There's a new expansion, which will be the same price. And also there's a whole new cycle, which is going to the moon.
So a bit of a hobby there to get into if you like it lots, but you don't need to go all the way to get the best out of it, I think.
And even if you just wanted to collect half of it with someone, say, you could do that quite happily because there's no crossover between the two sites.
Mm.
So if you were just to collect Corp and the other person wants to collect Runner, you could go 50-50 on it quite happily without hurting anything.
Yeah, that's not a bad system.
Apart from the fact you'd be able to count us.
Mm.
So I'd recommend this game.
I think that's a yes again, yes. Two yeses. Yay. Fantastic.
It's an incredibly good game with an incredible amount of depth.
Yeah,
and it does everything that a card game should do without any of the ickiness.
Mm, relatively simple to learn, isn't it? It's a bit hiccupy to begin with, once you get the hang of the flow and everything.
They do actually have some really good video tutorials.
Ah, right.
Online.
Multimedia age.
Yeah. Malifaux didn't. I looked.
There's a couple of some fan sites out there for Malifaux, though, with some stuff. You were looking at one there to help explain the duel stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely... if a company puts videos out to help teach the game, that's a good thing. Fantasy Flight are very good at this. Other companies may not be. Then again, Fantasy Flight...
relatively straightforward to do as well, set up and host and so on. I'm surprised more places don't do it by standard.
You just shove it on YouTube and it's all done. Of course, Fantasy Flight have the problem of... the manuals are written by trained monkeys, so they are incredibly awkward to read.
They do the manual for this one, because I remember us having a bit of trouble here and there looking at the flow. I mean, there's a big old flow chart on the back page on how the run works, which...
I'm sure there's a lot better way to explain the entire game rather than this manual.
Worth persevering with, though. Once you get the hang of it, it's good fun, yeah.
Yeah, you get past that very quickly, and it becomes quite easy to... play, and you don't need to carry the rule book around with you all the time, because once you know it, it's simple enough to keep in your head.
Like it.
So we recommend both games, which is unusual.
Yeah, excellent. We'll have to get some bad games so we can rant for a bit next time.
I don't know. The
backlog's looking quite full, though.
I've got some ideas of the next tabletop game we're going to do.
Okay.
But I haven't decided what the next other game's going to be.
Do suggest if you have a board game you think we'd find interesting, dear listener, and we'll see what we can do.
Yes, we're always open to new ones to play, especially if they're fun.
Yeah, excellent.
Or they're interesting. They can be flawed and interesting, and we'll still play them.
Mm.
Which is possibly more important. Yes, so...
excellent. So, what did you learn this week?
I learnt this week that when they start digging up your road looking for gas, it turns out it can
looking for gas.
Yeah, it can be a gas leak.
Are they prospectors?
Sometimes it's the water leaking into the gas pipes rather than the gas getting out.
Wow, yes, we've had some quite biblical, I suppose, is the word, weather in the UK over this last week, and it's been quite something for all concerned.
I spent the entire week digging my road up in different places.
This week I learned that in real life, meerkats are rubbish at organising motor insurance. I just don't want to talk about it. Do you spill?
You can go along to howtomurdertime.com, where you can leave comments on this episode and see our previous ones as well, where we talk about other amazing games like these and some not so amazing ones. You can also go along to our Steam group. There's a link on the site and join in the conversation.
Yep, we got details of there are static groups going on there at the moment. It's a fairly static set of static groups at the moment. We're quite content and playing week by week in The Secret World, The Old Republic, and Planetside 2 currently. So you can find out details there on how to get involved in any of that.
Yep, you can catch me on Moving on Mondays. This week we're talking about a documentary set in post-apocalyptic Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, Mad Max.
At last, Mad Max finally.
Yes.
Good grief.
Oh, the amount of effort I had to go through last night trying to find my copy of Mad Max. I found the second one first.
Uh-huh.
Then, annoyingly, I found the third one.
Yeah.
Completely misfiled on my shelves. And then I finally found the first
one. Isn't there a new one coming out?
Yeah, there is a new
one.
Remake
or something? Yeah.
Yeah. The buzz is okay on it.
Keep an eye out for that.
And on Thursdays, you can catch me on The Brainstorm, where I talk about the news.
Mm. I know also over on the Psycon Network, check out the Emma Mosketeers now. I think they sorted out their numbering problem, finally. Check them out for actual MMO news as well, because we don't really do much of that.
No.
And it's always interesting to
be
informed.
And occasionally a bit of healing.
Yeah. With that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.